There's an old truism that reminds us, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, but today is a gift, and that's why we call it the present. For the time that I first shared with the congregation that I would be departing my ministry this coming June, I've had an intention to be deeply present and in the moment as much as possible, to take it one day at a time. The future will come on its own. But the present is all that we have to create our lives as we want them to be. But staying present is always difficult, particularly through an ending. Trying to stay mindful and in the moment is a daily practice and often a struggle for me. Many days I don't do very well with that practice. And it may also be easier for the congregation, or at least a stronger impulse, to speculate about and plan for the time after my departure than to walk through the ambiguous and challenging process of being present to a relationship that is soon going to end. I've noticed that the UUA's human resources and consultants and literature about ministerial transitions, that in those resources there's an overwhelming amount of material and help focused on and available for the hiring of an interim minister, the search for a new settled minister, and almost nothing with regard to the last stage of a ministry that is coming to a close. And I thought that was very interesting. So I thought it might be a good idea to just name a few of the aspects of this experience and to acknowledge its challenges and to acknowledge that we're in it. And perhaps it will help us, it will help you and me to do this well. Once a month, I meet with three ministerial colleagues for a couple of hours each month for spiritual reflection on our lives and ministries. And this past autumn, we all realized that we were facing significant transitions of different kinds. We each felt challenged by the work that was in front of us, knowing it was going to take each of us into uncharted territory, into emotional terrain that was utterly new. One of my colleagues was facing a serious crisis in her personal life, a situation that was emotionally shattering, bewildering, and inconceivable to her. Another of the four of us was anticipating a happy change. In a few months, she and her lover's children were planning to move in together, and they were preparing for it and anticipating all the new experiences, both joyful and challenging, that this new arrangement would bring into their lives. The third of our group of four was not facing a dramatic external change, but was realizing that he needed to launch into an important new stage of inner work in his life to keep moving forward with his life in an intentional and healing way. And I had just announced my impending departure from Theodore Parker Church. And as a result of that announcement, many changes and undertakings and reactions had already been set in motion here. And so the ground was shifting underfoot, and yet I would remain with the congregation for 8 months in that shifting ground. So a range of emotions were present within the group: excitement, fear, wondering and anticipation, bewilderment, grief, anger, curiosity, resistance, longing, and most consistently, a sense of vulnerability. We all knew that we could not control much of what was going to happen as our situations unfolded, or how much we would be changed or how we would be changed. And as we explored this, I mentioned to my friends Stephen Levine's work as a teacher and author on the subject of meditation, of embodied presence. This is really one of his main things. And most particularly his remarkable work of helping people to live fully into dying, to heal into death, is how he puts it. Whether that death is of the physical body or of the limited, fixed sense of self. So his books, A Gradual Awakening, Healing into Life and Death, Who Dies, as well as various articles that I had read, they had all had a deep influence on me through the years. He explores how to be fully available and present to immediate experience, even when it is painful, confusing, frightening, or just deeply unfamiliar. He teaches how to hold charged emotions in the system of the body without pulling back or shutting down, and how to soften the heart and the belly with compassion so that we can accommodate realities that our minds want to reject. Someone in our group brought up the idea of working with his book, A Year to Live, as a way to be more intentional about how we were each going to move into and through the challenging year that we faced ahead of us. This book is a kind of workbook that guides the reader through a process of preparing for death psychologically, emotionally, relationally, and spiritually, even if one is in perfectly good health. And while death may seem like an extreme metaphor for some of these situations that I described, the process he outlines is relevant to any major life transition, any passage from an old state into a new and unfamiliar one, in which loss and closure and expansion into a new condition are all part of the work and can be undertaken with deeper awareness. Levine draws on this idea of contemplating one's death well before physical death comes. He takes this idea from the wisdom of the ages. It's a practice fundamental to many spiritual traditions. Tibetan Buddhists have the practice of meditating in the charnel grounds, the places of burial and cremation, as a meditation on the impermanence of the body and all things of the world. The Hindu sadhus, ascetic holy men, often coat their bodies with ash for the same reason. Christians have the image of the crucifixion at the center of their belief. And this past Wednesday was Ash Wednesday, when Christians accept the sign of the cross smeared onto their foreheads in ash with the words, "Remember that thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return." The Jewish High Holy Days are a time to take account of one's moral actions in the year that has just passed, to make amends and to seek reconciliation now when and where they're needed, because a time will come when that chance is gone, when, in poetic terms, the fate of the soul will have already been inscribed in the heavenly chronicles. And the Sufis have a practice they call fana and baka, the annihilation of the false self and the resurrection of the true being and the divine. They say, die before death and resurrect now. So as we heard earlier, the poet Kabir, who was influenced by Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, he summed it up with those lines. What we call salvation belongs to the time before death. If you don't break your ropes while you're alive, do you think ghosts will do it for you afterwards? Well, I was well familiar with this notion of preparing for death as a spiritual practice, familiar up here. And in our little group of four, we all agreed it was an intriguing idea and decided to use the book as a tool for our conversations and reflections together in the year that was to come. And I was enthusiastic for the idea, but when I finally actually sat down with the book and began to peruse its chapters, something else started to happen. Here are a few of his 39 chapters in the book. There's just a few here. Catching up with your life, practicing dying, renewing evolution, famous last words, life review, forgiveness, living in the body, with death just over my shoulder, letting go of control. These are some of the things that he addresses. And as I peruse these chapter titles, my anxiety started to creep up. And I read the passage that you heard earlier, that Jennifer read so beautifully. To investigate the dread of and resistance to life and death. To investigate that part of myself that refuses to take birth fully. To live with mercy and awareness in the midst of the consequences of love or the lack thereof. to cut through a lifetime of confusion and forgetfulness. As I began to understand what Stephen Levine actually wanted me to do, instead of curiosity and interest, I began to feel like I was going to crawl out of my skin, and my anxiety meter like flipped into the red zone. So some abstract part of me, maybe it's my intellectual integrity or conscience, maybe it's my spiritual ego, maybe it's my professional ego, or maybe it's actually a wise part of me that's interested in my own spiritual evolution. But some part of me thought it was a good idea to do this work. But all the rest of me just wanted to run shrieking in the other direction. I wanted to zone out with the TV, raid the refrigerator, surf the web, bury myself in an entertaining novel all at the same time, or simply do anything that won't involve awareness or feelings, much less those associated with my death. But I think it was not really the prospect of my death that was terrifying me, because I hadn't really gotten in touch with that in a real way. I think what seemed so difficult was simply the prospect of trying to be very wakefully present while facing another kind of ending, that of gradually saying goodbye to this community. There is one classic piece of literature that offers guidance to ministers departing from the ministry in Roy Oswald's Running Through the Thistles. And this short little booklet begins with the following reflection by Episcopal priest Reverend Park Street. Believe it or not. Mr. Street writes, "From the time I announced my resignation at St. Margaret's through my final Sunday, the comparisons of terminating with a parish and dying often occurred to me. While the congregation went through emotions analogous to having a significant person die, my emotions were those of the person dying. Throughout the time, I felt a mixture of emotions, sadness at the prospect of separating my life from the lives of many who had been significant persons for me, and at separating from a community that had been nurturing for me. I felt a mixture of anticipation for a new adventure and some fear of the unknown. There were the more down-to-earth feelings that came as I brought closure to relationships with people, trying to articulate what our relationship had been and struggling to face the fact that they would be ended or at least changed in a most significant way. And there was a celebration of what my relationship had been with the parish. It was like a funeral with me present to hear the eulogies. But it left me feeling ready to leave and to start a new adventure. The comparisons with dying are many. It takes conscious effort and courage to face what needs to be done. Some matters I did not face, but hopefully the experience did prepare me for better dyings along the way henceforth." End quote. Now, I don't mean to suggest that I would like our final party to be like a funeral where I'm available, where I'm there to hear the eulogies. Nor that we're in our last days together, and there's still much to be created together and to enjoy before June, the end of June. But I felt like I at least should just acknowledge this territory that we're in, that it's strange and ambiguous and sometimes difficult. It's emotionally complex. The other day, a few days ago, I noticed that I was experiencing all my interactions and meetings as if through a wall of water. It was an oddly dissociated sense, and it actually occurred to me, I wonder if this is what it's like when someone knows they're going to pass away, and they know that others are going to continue on without them. Do they have this sense of watching things through a wall of water? I also notice myself much tearier than usual. I'm not a dramatically emotive person, so it's been interesting for me to see that in myself as well. So the part of me that wants to do... There's part of me that wants to do the work that Levine describes in A Year to Live, and wants to finish my time here with Theodore Parker Church with the utmost integrity and presence, intentionality and thoroughness. And likewise, there are parts of me that want to check out, to pretend everything is just normal, to avoid uncomfortable and awkward things like trying to make amends with someone with whom I've injured, or finishing things that I've left long incomplete, or admitting that I will never finish them, or saying important, heartfelt things that need to be said to so many people. Around the time that I started reading Levine's book, I put my messy office through a long overdue organization and purging. And as I tackled these multiple stacks of disorganized papers, it was like an archaeological dig, rediscovering deeper and deeper layers of the past that had been covered over with the silt of subsequent messiness. And as I worked my way through these piles, sorting and tossing and organizing, I realized that my towers of paper had been built with the motto, "I'll deal with that later." They're like monuments to the spirit of avoidance. Well, what if there is no later? Or at least a rapidly diminishing later? And what if you have to deal with it now? Realizing that now is the time, in a way that it never has quite been before, was actually quite stressful, quite confrontational. So when I decided to explore this subject today, I'm breaking one of my own preaching rules, which is to avoid speaking about a life experience in which I am currently up to my eyeballs. So my rule has been to wait until I'm securely on the other side of something before sharing about my personal journey through it. I won't try to offer any wisdom about how to cross a swollen river while the roiling waters are up to my chin. I will wait, not only till I'm on the other bank, but until it's a memory, an experience I have processed, which I can recount like a storyteller rocking on a front porch. "Did I ever tell you about the time I crossed that flooded river and nearly got myself drowned?" So I've always been concerned that I don't want to, if I don't have that perspective, I might invite you into dangerous, murky territory, or I won't be able to offer clarity or guidance, assurance or leadership. I might increase your anxiety rather than ease it. And I might reveal that I am a mere human being who stumbles blindly upon life lessons just like the next person, and who has wisdom only in distant hindsight. As if you didn't already know that about me. So this morning is a bit of an exception to my own rule. And as I was preparing and writing, I was very aware of being in the river and in it for the first time and experiencing this unfolding in real time. But I can't wait until I'm on the other side of the river to offer wisdom about this, because by the time I have that insight, I will be gone. And if I'm determined to appear ever wise, knowledgeable, in control, and knowing exactly what I'm doing and what this is all about to the end of my ministry, I would be lying. And I would be putting up a wall between us by pretending to be outside of something that I'm quite in, and by pretending to be an expert rather than to offer the authenticity of my own vulnerability and wonderment. Stephen Levine's chapters on the life review are a powerful guide as to how to complete a phase of one's life with mindfulness. It involves, at first, just reviewing experiences in one's mind and heart and watching the feelings about those experiences as they rise. So it's a sort of an inventory of residual feeling. And one of the practices that I'm doing is I actually wrote the names of everyone that I have worked with in this congregation since I've come here on a little scroll. And I take it with me into meditation, and I just move the scroll through my fingers and touch the names and observe that where I am in my relationship with that person. So part of this is just a contemplation and asking myself, you know, what maybe needs to come out of that. The life review involves practices of gratitude, expressions of sorrow for injuries done, forgiveness of self and others, finishing certain important pieces of work that can be finished, letting go of what cannot be finished, celebration of beauty and acknowledgement and accomplishment, honoring growth and change, sending one another forth with blessing. Some of this work can be done in conversation with others, and in our case, perhaps a one-on-one meeting or meeting together in some groups or a lunch or dinner together. Some of it is done in private prayer and contemplation. My own intention is to do this as well as I can, to be compassionate with myself for the places where I'm not yet ready or able to address something. Hopefully I will grow into it. And I humbly and warmly invite you to have your own reflection of our time together. And I want to say that I don't want anyone to feel like, you know, this is a heavy thing, and you know, if you make an appointment with me, I'm going to demand a heavy conversation. it's just an invitation and something to just consider in your heart. I hope that we can share words that will free us to live completely into our present and into our future. And just remind us of the song we sang when we first began this morning. Come sing a song with me. Come walk in rain with me. Come share a rose with me, that I might know your mind. May it be so. Let's sing together our